Hello, you're very welcome to the Alison Spittle Show with me, Alison Spittle. See, I'm still back. And this week's guest is one of my favourite comedians and people. my friend Fern Brady. I was going to keep her for 100th episode, but why do that? Why bother? You know, eat the chicken Kiev first, then have the peas. You know, you don't have to. That analogy may not work that well, but I'm quite tired. So you're very welcome to the Alison Spittle Show. We are going to do a thing with Head Stuff Plus called HP Plus, which means that I'm going to bring out a new podcast called Voice Notes from the Edge. And it's going to be a monologue style podcast because all the good comedians are doing that. And sure, why can't I give that a go? And that will be as a part of HPN Plus. Go listen to the podcast that we made together right now. Have a listen to it. This is the Fern Brady.
Hello.
You're very welcome to the Alison Spittle Show.
Thanks for finally having me.
I know.
But didn't we do, I thought we did an episode. Oh no, that was another podcast that didn't release at your flat in Dublin.
What was that podcast about again?
One that I've been trying to do for ages. Well, you've done two episodes of my podcast I haven't released. One where I try and learn good social skills and how it would be normal. I'm definitely gonna do it one day. The cat's fidgeting.
It's my fault for putting down a long
alluring piece of string.
It's very alluring. It was asking for it. It was, wasn't it? So one podcast was like to. What is that phone? Sorry.
That's an interactive cat feeder that I bought him because it's meant to be bad for him to just have his food like there in the bowl. So he should have an interactive feeder. But I don't know why he's going over it because he doesn't give a shit normally.
It looks like a gumball machine.
Yeah, it was meant to, and keep getting him more and more toys, and he really, like, just plays with them for a day and then leaves them.
What are you afraid of with this cat?
Like, if he's not constantly stimulated, he destroys stuff.
That's fair enough. So, it's to protect the possessions.
Or he walks around meowing, which was dead cute initially, but it's, like, constant if he's bored.
It feels weird to do a podcast where we were talking into mics when, like, we're friends and we just have, like, a normal conversation, but now it feels very formal.
I'm okay.
No, I'm not. Like,
oh, okay. But, can we promote our podcast on this?
Let's do it now. Let's get that out of the way.
If we had Joe Rogan type microphones in front of us where they were hanging down, would that help?
I think so, it would. It would. It don't matter.
You have to get used to talking this way because we've got another 22 episodes to go.
So, like, we got a podcast called The Wheel of Misfortune. Mm. It's basically a podcast that is a way of us talking about our shared traumas in different things, but kind of like in a game show style. Am I wrong? I feel I'm wrong. I feel that's not the spirit of the podcast.
Well, kind of. We just wanted to tell really humiliating stories, but I suppose we had to put that sort of... When you put that spin on it, that sounds good to commissioners. So,
yeah.
But it's basically just a funny story podcast. and then people submit their own stories.
And I really like that because
this
week we've got so we're doing a podcast on drugs, and we've asked people to send in their voice notes, and I don't know these people, but they send it in like they're sending it to friends, and I feel like they're my friends. Do you know?
That's been the best bit of doing it, I think. Like, I quite underestimated how much fun it would be going through all the submissions.
Yeah.
Doesn't it makes you think how bad people are at telling stories, though? Because a lot of the time they're warming up. It's almost like they're warming themselves up to tell the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's like, what detail do you give? What detail do you not give? It kind of made me appreciate, like, being a comedian and the way you self-edit all the time, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
It is a skill.
Yeah, like, because I do storytelling shows, and it made me think back to how much you have to cut out unnecessary stuff, because we'll get things that are 6 minutes long, and then they'll finally get to the bit where they nod off their own pants, which was one of the ones that we got.
Oh, that was amazing, that one. Like, yeah. Some woman... had to like bite the sides of her shitty knickers.
She was at a festival.
Lionel Richie was on. I like that detail.
Yeah, but also festival toilets sometimes have a thing where basically the door only covers like your belly button and a bit of your fanny, and then everything else you can just see.
Right,
and you can see the person. Have you seen these toilets at festivals?
No, I've never.
I've experienced it, and it's hot. You can't believe that they've made it. It's like a half a door.
And why are they like that? Is that to make it easier to clean? Did they just?
I thought it was because they don't have the budget for full size doors or something.
There's gotta be like, I don't know.
But yeah, so this woman shat herself before getting to the toilet. Went into the toilet at the festival, and she didn't want people to see her shitty pants drop down, which they would, because it was just a very small door. So she, in an ingenious move, gnawed her own pants off.
But so she bent down, she had like the agility to, I couldn't gnaw my own pants off, even if they were incredibly, go on, you can do it.
Oh, well, wait, so I can bend my face to my knee,
your
and
knee.
If your pants were at your knees,
no one
can fucking
no one can lick no their pants.
Yeah, that was what, that's why she said that before me. I was like, yeah, she didn't do that, but just a sample of what's to come. the flavor of shitty knickers.
That was specifically the subject as well. Imagine if we did, because it's cool because we have to come up with different subjects to go on the wheel of misfortune. Mm. And shitty knickers would be up there, I feel. Another one I feel that we talk about a lot is religion. So what religion did you used to be and why?
Catholic, because I love the iconography.
Me too.
No, because I was born. Because I was born in Scotland in a bit that was full of Irish immigrants. I was a really tight Catholic till I was 16. Well, I believed in it till I was 13.
Yeah.
And then I started asking my mum to let me stop going to church. And then I had to ask for 3 years, like every week.
And did you, because I'm trying to figure out what's the difference between being a Catholic in Scotland and being a Catholic in Ireland. So did you do serving? Were you a server?
I was an altar girl.
Cool. Did you have to make a pledge when you were 13 not to drink alcohol?
No, I had my confirmation, which you do when you're 11 or 12.
Yeah, I was 11 or 12. Sorry, but did you have to do a pledge where you don't drink alcohol in your confirmation?
No, because don't you get wine at communion?
Well, in Ireland, we have this thing called the Pioneers, which is like an organisation to, like a temperance movement within Ireland that appeal to 12-year-olds, and then it finishes.
Oh.
And you make a pledge during your confirmation to say you'll never drink again. until you're 18.
and how's that worked out in Ireland?
There was Bailey's cheesecake for my dinner, and I was like really upset, but I ate it. But like, I was like, my parents are.
Wait, you're a Catholic?
Yeah.
Sorry, I keep fucking. I don't know why I get mixed up about this all the time.
It's because my dad's English. Yeah, I'd say. And like,
sorry.
No, don't.
But I don't know. I did know you were a Catholic, but then yeah, the half English thing throws me off.
It always throws people off. It always like, I think it makes people feel that I'm posher than I am when. Like, if you met my dad. Have you met my dad?
No, but you showed me the video of him singing karaoke, and I felt like that summarized a lot.
It did, yeah.
It was, like, very with gusto, and all the angry stories you've told me about him, I was like, yeah, that's a man who's really taken karaoke by the balls.
Has your dad ever done karaoke?
He must have done, but not in front of me.
What would you feel would be your dad's karaoke song?
Little Respect by Erasure.
Nice.
See how quickly I knew that.
Yeah. It's like knowing your dad's star sign or something.
Yeah, he loves to dance to it at weddings.
What was it like growing up in Bathgate?
The clearest understanding I got from someone of Bathgate was last year. I've told you this already, but
yes.
For the benefit of the listeners, I was
that's
living.
The hard thing about this podcast is like, I feel like I'm asking you questions I know about you already.
Oh, no,
and
no,
I don't
sorry.
Need to feel like I'm like, oh, this thing that you told me 6 months ago, I found interesting and want to lash into that in front of people.
Oh no. So I was living with an Irish girl from the Stand last Edinburgh Festival, and she also works as a social worker in the area I grew up in. And she said, she was telling me about going to church in Ireland and how she didn't always go every week. And I was like telling her about growing up Catholic in Bathgate, and she was like, I've worked in Bathgate and it's honestly more Catholic than Ireland. But
right.
The people that are from there generally all come from Northern Ireland or Donegal, which is in the north of Ireland. So I've now realised that basically where I'm from is like a mini Donegal, and they've totally preserved that culture. Because people fucking really define themselves by their Catholicism there. And this is the mad thing, was if you grow up Catholic where I'm from, generally you would be more poor and working class.
Yeah.
And all the Protestants are rich. And then I found out there's this dreamland where that's the other way around, and it's Ireland.
That's
how's that.
But like, it's not that, like, it's hard to describe. I feel like Catholicism is like is the kind of, I don't want, like it's hard, like a lot of like feckin' lobby groups go, Ireland is a Catholic country, when it's when it's about like destroying reproductive rights and stopping gay marriage. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I do know if I do jokes about like communion, or when I did fake masses during the lockdown, there was a big reaction to that, and people were going on about their favorite hymns and stuff. So it's residually Catholic, but like, I don't think it's like, I don't think anyone goes to church anymore. But in regards to Protestants, like, I always thought they were rich, but that's like, yeah, because my granddad's one, and he seemed rich, like, compared to my Catholic granddad. But I don't think you're.
Yeah, actually, sorry, I'm thinking of Northern Ireland now. Northern Ireland, the Catholics are rich, aren't they?
Jeez, do you know what? I have no proper knowledge of. That's the shameful thing about like the Republic of Ireland, is that even they have a different comedy. They have a different, like a whole different comedy.
Yeah,
because
remember
there.
We gigged in Belfast together.
Yeah,
and it was previously when I'd gigged with you before. It was in Dublin. Just loved you, And then we done Belfast, and it wasn't that, like, you didn't have a bad gig, but it wasn't, like, the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like Northern Ireland and Scotland have so much more in common.
Way more.
It's nuts, like, how similar we are. Even down to, like, when I'm in Belfast, everyone's got the same fucking face as me, and, like, we've just got this look, like... And her accent, I met a girl, she works for Phil McIntyre, actually. And I thought she was from my area, but she's from Northern Ireland. And there's just a town in Northern Ireland that has the same accents as us. But yeah, anyway, Bathgate, everything was defined by sectarianism.
Sectarianism?
It's so big. That's why it's weird to when I moved to England and everyone started defining me as Scottish, because when I get called Scottish I just hear Protestant. Such a thing.
So when you were in Scotland, you would you have defined yourself as like a Catholic Scottish person?
Oh my god, yeah.
And what would be like the
not me personally, you're grown up taught that, and taught that like the royals are evil and like
they're not wrong.
Like the orange men used to walk past, because there's big orange marches
in Bathgate.
Aye. Wait, did Bathgate have one? Wait, it was all this sort of scummy little satellite towns, Armadale and Whitburn and Blackburn. I don't know why I'm saying this like someone's gonna fact check it.
Yeah,
it was all the little shitty villages had orange walks. And my gran would cry when they walked past, and she would go, "Oh, Fern, those men are evil." So it's quite like deeply ingrained.
And they probably just like dressing up. Like half the time, I think orange men just do it to dress up and to have a few beers. I don't know if they hate Catholics as much. I like to pretend that
it's weird for
that
me
they like the sashes more so than they hate Catholics.
Like, from an educated point of view, as someone that's been away from there for ages, I find it really parochial and stupid and embarrassing. But at the same time, there's such a strong thing of, like, it's so deep down to not like orange men.
Yeah, no.
Even if you were neutral, though,
like, yeah. Why would you like people that march to antagonize other people?
It's so, but like, this is how much being Catholic was such a big thing, was whenever my mum asked dad to do the garden, he'd be like, "Catholics don't have nice gardens." He was like, "We've no time because we go to church on a Sunday."
It's the natural way.
Yeah, it was just like a Protestant thing to do your garden.
When is the last time you were in Bathgate?
I passed through it on the train, but my mum doesn't live there. Like, no one I know lives there anymore. So, probably 4 years ago, I think.
What's, like, your relationship with it now compared to before you left?
Well, I don't go... To be honest, I never really went back. There was one fringe where I lived there. I lived there during the festival to save money. Just for the month, but all I did was go from my mum's house to the train station. I didn't have like a I don't ever go back and it's like, "Oh, I'm going to my favourite pub or club." Like, it's not like that at all.
You're not like, "There's Lewis Cavaldi's house," or whatever.
Yeah, well, he's from Whitburn, which is one of the little towns nearby. Right. But I think he seems to feel more warm about Bathgate than warmly about it or whatever.
I find it like hard to talk about my hometown without feeling like I'm like falsely representing them. Like, anytime I talk about them, I want to go, "No, these are the facts." Because I'm just so afraid I'll be at the shop. And then, because someone came up to me once and they were like, "You say you're from Mullingar, but you're not. You're from Ballymore. Why? why are you telling people this? And I'm like, because no one knows what Ballymore is. Like, the nearest biggest town is Mullingar.
Fucking
and
hell.
And it's easiest to do references to Joe Dolan than it is to Ballymore. But yeah, it's kind of, it's good. It's that's what I wanted to talk to you about. It's kind of like, I feel like why we're friends is because we talk about really dark shit. We do loads of jokes about Catholicism and death.
And we're both from nothing towns.
Yeah.
Like,
Ballymore will kill me. It's an everything town.
I don't even feel, I just feel fairly indifferent to my town, I guess. But
how do you feel about being Scottish, or being like, what's your relationship?
I feel like I'm supposed to put all this meaning on to being Scottish, but I don't feel anything about it. I've had that imposed on me. Being from an Irish Catholic background is a much bigger thing than like tartan and fucking Alex Salmond and all that. Like, not fucking Alex Salmond with those that tell you, you must be so grateful about the coronavirus happened, just as all the, because the allegations about him were mortifying.
Oh yeah, what were they saying?
Like, he walked towards a woman like a zombie, like he was a zombie, with his hands stretched out in front of him.
And was he like naked, or?
He wasn't, but he basically cracked onto women in a really embarrassing way.
But he pretended to be a zombie.
Yeah.
And he's like, instead of brains, he's going like, fannies.
I don't know, but he's just, but also it just didn't surprise me. But yeah, anyway, Scottishness, I've got a really uneasy relationship with, because it's more of a thing that you get, that gets foisted on you. And the English don't have a clue about, they don't seem to know about Catholicism or sectarianism.
No.
And what a big thing that is.
No, they've no idea. They've no idea. If you said Eucharist to them.
Exactly.
They'd have no idea.
Honestly, like, even I've had jokes in my shows before about confirmation and Catholic names and stuff, and that would do amazing in Scotland.
Yeah.
And I would just cut it out when I was touring England, because there must be a, there's hardly any Catholics. Is that not because that there was that queen, her sister was a Catholic, and then the queen decided she was like well into Protestant.
Elizabeth.
Yeah. I only know that because Kate Blanchett was in a film, and wasn't Kathy Burke the Catholic?
She was.
And she is a Catholic as well.
Kathy Burke's a Catholic.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, her parents are Irish, yeah.
Oh, man. And, like, I remember because I used to love Gimme, Gimme, Gimme.
She's like Harry two Enfield. Of my tweets. Sorry.
No way.
I know. I was like, this is the most starstruck I've ever been.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you.
So apparently she is friends of a sister of a neighbour of mine back in Ireland.
Oh, and my God.
Once I heard she went to my village, but I didn't see her. So I think people were lying. Like, also, a lad who played Paul out of Coronation Street went to my neighbour's house. They were like raves and stuff. They used to be like New Age hippies or travellers. New Age travellers, is that what they're called? People that put on raves and like, but that's not their only thing. They're just cool. They live off the land and like, but they used to live outside my village, and I was too young to go to the raves. And like,
oh my God.
I was just about of age, they were gone. I don't know where they went. But so I'm Facebook friends with some of them, and their lives look amazing. Like, they're like snorkeling off the like Thailand, just being very happily married, like just beautiful lives. And I'm just
and
like,
it's her friends.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like my neighbor's sister is friends with her, apparently. Oh, but I don't know.
That's cool. I hope we could get her for the podcast.
Mate, I would kill for her on our podcast. Yeah. I would, seriously. Like, did you watch her documentaries?
Yeah, I remember it was on last
during the
summer.
Fringe.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was so good when she went to the Love Island women.
Yeah. Do you remember The Fringe? And we like, we were singing, what was it, like Papa Roach and stuff.
That was last year.
That was good fun.
That was such a special night because I was like crying for ages. Yeah.
And we got pizza.
Yeah. It was like, why? How come loads of fringe things are like that where like.
They're highly emotional or.
Well, no, this has happened a couple of times when I've been pals with you and it's been nice where basically one of us has the worst moment of the fringe.
Yes.
And then. The other one comforts them because there was the time that guy shot himself and you had like the Times or someone in
Scotsman,
and you were like, and the Scotsman were in to review your show and you said guy in a wheelchair, can I say that?
Yeah, go for it.
I don't know what I mean, people in wheelchairs exist. A guy in a wheelchair shot himself.
He wasn't in a wheelchair.
He wasn't?
No.
Why did I think that?
Mate.
Because didn't you say he had a helper who then tried to stand him up and his shitty trousers fell down?
That was the woman picking up the tickets. She wasn't his helper. She was. He was just a man with shit in his pants.
I was in a venue that was like a 50s, not even a 50 seater.
I think it was a 30 seater at the top floor. It was so warm.
It was a 30 seater venue and it was, yeah, like kind of turret of a pub of the Counting House, if you remember, if anyone knows that venue. And then yeah, you were crying over the shit, but then you, me and Ruth had a nice time. And you introduced me to Ruth.
That's true. Yeah, Ruth's lovely. Yeah, there's so much. I hope the Fringe has been cancelled this year, and I'm kind of relieved in a way that like now it's July, I would feel that I would be panicking about it, but I kind of feel strangely calm.
Weren't you doing a preview that night? Yeah. Remember the night where you found out Ireland was going to lock down?
Yeah.
And then you done that preview.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, yeah. And then kind of the way that the world has gone now, like with stand-up comedy, I have no stand-up gigs for the future. Except in Ireland, but I don't know if they're going to happen. I'm not being...
Have you?
Yeah, in like November. They're booked for November. But
I've got a tour to Europe in September and I'm still like, why have they not told me?
Yeah, yeah.
What's
yeah.
happening?
I like, you're doing some driving gigs.
Oh, fuck yeah. I've got to write jokes for that, like, this week.
What, like, what are they going to be like? What have you been told?
I've not written, the driving gigs.
Yeah, like, how do people laugh?
In their cars.
But how do you...
Well, I guess I won't hear it.
That's true.
Which is weird. But I'm also doing an outdoor gig.
What, with people sitting down?
Yeah, in Bristol.
Oh my gosh.
So I've got quite a packed diary in July. I've got 3 gigs. pretty big deal. I'm quite frightened to do stand-up again, though, because I can't remember what it feels like. And also I'm just like, I'm quite content making my boyfriend laugh and like,
yeah,
yeah, maybe I can just be a mildly witty person that lives in a house.
To be like, yeah, that weird validation thing that I get is gone now, and I don't know, like, yeah, will there ever be a hunger for it again? Or because it's quite nice,
but you're still doing creative things, right?
Totally, yeah, but you know, like, doing stand up for me is like being. Like a little, it's like going to the Go Ape adventure course, which is a thing in England for my Irish listeners, right? It's like this thing where adults climb trees but with safety harnesses and stuff, and it's an adventure. So it feels like a mild like joyride to do stand up, and I used to feel addicted to it, and now it's kind of gone.
Yeah, this is the longest break I've had from it in 10 years. So I had a terrible fear of taking a break from it.
Yeah.
Because loads of people early on would take breaks and then they just drop off the circuit. Or I've seen people come back from breaks and you can see how weak they are.
Yeah.
And the more you do it, the more I felt like I'd got into such a habit of not stopping gigging that I genuinely didn't give a shit when I went on stage. And it meant if you're playing a big room or playing something you're meant to feel nervous about, you stop feeling that.
Yeah.
So then you can just concentrate on what you're saying. And now all that's gone. God, sorry, that's really miserable.
No!
But like, I'm going to have to be like a new stand-up again now.
Yeah, you are.
So, but I suppose it's made me excited.
I'm excited.
To write new stuff. Because I've got to write new stuff anyway, because I filmed my show.
You just got that done just before lockdown.
Like the day before.
Yeah, so tell us about that. Like,
oh, well, I keep thinking how stupid I was for... So an American company filmed my special, and hopefully it'll come out at some point. And then... But the week that I was preparing for it, I had like blinkers on, just being like, have to get ready to do this special. So me and Alison did a gig where I was warming up for the special and she was doing a preview, and she was like upset because all her work just had been cancelled. And I didn't go, yeah, all my work's about to be cancelled too. I just was like, la la la. And then even like, I remember that week, I'd done a big West End theatre show and my agent kept using hand sanitizer and flipping out, and we were like laughing at him, and he was like, this is going to be the end of the world. And we were like, okay, idiot. And and then like someone wanted a selfie with me when I was coming out, and my agent was like, that makes it sound like I was bombarded. Like one person wanted a selfie and it's someone I've met twice before. And my agent was like, don't get a selfie with it. Like, don't let them put their arm around you. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he was like, stay in the rest of the week. Then the day that we filmed, I found out 220 people didn't turn up. But no one told me. And they just rearranged the chairs and stuff so that I wouldn't know. That makes it sound like it was empty. It was two different shows. Anyway. Yeah. But like... And then I still thought everything was normal. The next day, I was in this bizarre scenario where I was in like a luxury hotel suite. Did I not video phone you?
No.
I definitely did. I was meant to be doing this charity gig. Oh no, wait, I just got you mixed up with Ruth.
No, you're fine, don't worry.
So fucking racist.
It's fine.
I was meant to be doing this charity gig and they were like, oh, we'll put you in like this lovely hotel room. So I was in this hotel that had a bath in the bedroom, and then
was this like a Hotel de Ville or something like that?
Yeah.
I've been in those before.
So I was sitting in that and I was like, this is great. And then I got a phone call saying all the gigs being pulled and we're not sure what's happening. And then I sort of gradually started to think, oh, I wonder if gigs are gonna get cancelled. And then I still was like, oh no, I'm gonna go and do my tour shows. And it took me like a day, I think it was the next day, my tour shows started getting cancelled because I was meant to be going around Scotland.
Yeah.
And then I just had to like get an emergency change of train ticket. But it still took me maybe another month to be like, oh, well, I was like, I think we'll be doing gigs again in July. And then it was September and now I'm like January.
Yeah, I heard and it's really January.
Yeah, but now there's going to be another outbreak.
Yeah, this is very much a podcast of its time. And
yeah.
When people listen to it.
Well, maybe one day it will be playing in a museum with like mannequins of you. And then it'll be like your stuffed body with a flower crown on it. Because you know how you get really creative museum installations sometimes?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It could be that. And then it'll just have your voice being piped out. This is a podcast.
This is a podcast. Recorded. I'll be like, we're never going to die.
Yeah. That would be cool.
What else should I ask? Oh, I want to ask you as well. You studied Arabic in uni.
Yeah, not for long.
What made you pick Arabic? I bet you, like, I'd love to know this, actually.
So basically, I was really into languages at school. I've since realised with the whole process of trying to get a fucking Asperger's diagnosis that having specialist interests is like part of it, because I weren't just good at French. I would get books out to teach myself Danish, having not been to Denmark, and like get just was interested in all different languages to like quite a pathetic extent. And then I moved schools so that I could do advanced French and Spanish for fun. So when I was applying to uni, my hires, which is like Scottish A levels, wait, this is an Irish audience.
Leaving cert. Yeah.
So I'd done like French, Italian, Spanish, advanced French. And then when I was applying to uni, I was like, those are going to be too easy. So I'm going to do Arabic and Persian. But on the uni application form, I also applied to do Sanskrit, not knowing it was a dead language because my parents hadn't been to uni.
Jeez.
And you had to put on the application form. I've just remembered this. You had to put like why you were interested in it. And I was like, oh, I've always been interested in like Indians or something.
Oh my God.
And I'm pretty sure, isn't Sanskrit a fucking dead language?
I'll Google it. Do you want me to?
I think so.
Okay, Google. Is Sanskrit a dead language? Wait, oh, it's gone into the headphones.
What's she saying?
Sanskrit was never a dead language and it is still alive, though its prevalence is lesser than ancient and medieval times.
She's a bit pissed off.
She is. She's.
It was never a dead language.
Do you know my favourite thing to do with the Google? Well, I'll do it for you. Okay. So I got. Okay, Google. Please spell a doop doop a dab a ba doop a ba ba.
I don't do that. Is spelled I D O N single quote T D O T H A T.
That's right. I do better over there. Okay, Google. Spell a ba 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 ba.
Available is spelled A-V-A-I-L-A-B-L-E.
Do you want to give it a go?
I can't believe you've done this.
Yeah, I did it in front of Simon the other day and it was, I won't lie, hilarious.
Oh.
But it wasn't like this. I'll try it. Wait. Okay, Google. Spell.
Spell what?
Okay, Google. Okay, Google. Okay, Google. Please spell.
Please spell P-L-S-E.
Hours of fun.
That's amazing.
So, back to the thing. Sanskrit is not.
Oh, yeah. So, anyway, I got accepted to do Arabic. And I think September the 11th just was in the recent past.
Nice. Not nice. And, sorry. Yeah.
So, yeah, basically I just went because I wanted to contradict what everyone was saying. And I wanted to, I think they told me I could become a spy when I went in for the uni interview.
That's what they said.
But at the time I wanted to be a writer as well. The main thing I wanted to do was do creative writing in English. But I thought, well, that's quite high risk, and nobody in my family or that was giving me advice. They were just happy I was going to uni. So I did languages, realised I hated it. I had to do Islamic history because I was doing Arabic and Persian. You had to like learn about the Islamic world for going there, and basically the more I learned about it, the more I was like, I really don't want to go to Egypt for my third year. They had to send us, they were looking at sending us to Afghanistan at one point because Iran was too dangerous.
Whoa.
So when Afghanistan's the safer option for your fucking Erasmus year or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm out.
I felt squeamish about asking you about stripping because.
Oh, I thought like, it was because you hated strippers.
Well, that too, but.
Yeah, but I didn't like them before I was one.
No, it's like, I feel that when you get interviewed by papers that they kind of focus on you being a stripper.
There's a reason I don't like talking about it to journalists.
Yeah, so I didn't want it to be like, oh, you're my friend, come on my podcast. And by the way, that thing that you don't want to talk about to journalists, will you talk about it on my podcast? It feels a bit like...
No, I don't mind talking about it to you. Well, I'd rather you ask about it than... Because with journalists, what annoy... Well, I'll explain why.
Yeah.
When I was doing that job, I was doing it so that I could work as an unpaid intern at newspapers so that I could be a journalist after uni. Journalism favors people who are wealthy enough to do endless unpaid internships, and I wanted to work at my student newspaper, which involved basically like having a full-time job on top of your coursework, right?
What aspect in the student newspaper were you working on? Were you doing like articles or columns?
Articles. What was it? Yeah. So I started off writing, or just write little music reviews, and then the guys that run the music page were like, "Oh, these are funny. You should do more." And then I started writing little reviews of TV shows, and then one of my mates said, "These are really funny. Have you heard of this competition that the Guardian has for student journalists?" And I was like, oh, this is a bit embarrassing. But I'd never read broadsheets growing up because...
I didn't either. So there's no embarrassment. Yeah. What's the embarrassment about?
I don't know. And they were just really big and unwieldy to open.
Well, do you know what annoyed me about The Sun was I thought the best stories were on page 3. But yet there was a set of tits on it as well. But it would also have gossip about Charlotte Church, which I would be into as like a 13-year-old girl. So yeah. I'd have to cover up the woman's chest and then read my little bits of gossip.
Actually, when I went to journalism school down the line, you learn how to translate unbelievably dull stories into ones for Sun readers. So we did something on, I think it was like new road regulations brought out by the EU or something. God knows, something so dull. And they were like, this is really boring, isn't it? You have to write this into a tabloid form and make it engaging. And once you realise, like, yeah, it was just really uninteresting.
But what kind of language did they use? Is it like, whoa, look at this road? Or what's the key thing when writing for a tabloid?
It's not just going, whoa. Sorry. Well, it's something that you'll understand as a comedian and something that I appreciate having done journalism training and then done comedy is I had a lecturer at uni that used to talk in a really pretentious, needlessly academic way. I think I was doing a course in like 18th century philosophy and literature or something. And he just talked in this really wanky way that didn't communicate stuff clearly. And that was the first time I learned that there's no need to talk like that. And it's actually a way of you elevating yourself rather than communicating the message clearly. Then when you do journalism, you're learning how to communicate your message to a target audience. And once you realize what the media does is the real clever thing rather than some dry shite academia, it just makes you think about comedy differently.
So it feels like your college years were just making you be ready to do comedy.
Well, yeah, so for example, you know how you get certain comics that they'll do comedy that's very much like, I read books. I was kind of like snobby and wanted to show people that I read books when I was younger. And then the more I learned about how to effectively communicate something, the more I was like, nah, that's just you trying to make you look good. So now I don't have insecurity, like I swear quite a lot and I don't have any insecurity about that. Or yeah. You know how men try and turn it into, that's not ladylike language.
No, it's like you've lost the argument straight away if you swear and that's not a real thing.
I can write in a dry academic way if I want. Like, I've done the bit of proving that I'm intelligent, so I'm going to talk in a regional accent and swear.
I kind of hate that, though, the way that, like, if you have a regional accent, you have to kind of prove that you're intelligent. Have, like, a normal, not normal, normal is the wrong word, but, like, what would be a good description of a person that talks and you know they know nothing, but because of their accent, they're just...
A received pronunciation, RP accent.
RP, yeah. It's just, it's so weird.
Yeah, it's really persistent, though. Well, actually, that brings me back to the next bit in the story.
Yeah.
So my mate at uni, he's now, like, the fucking Guardian's sports editor, cunt. Anyway, he was like... But that's for different reasons. He said... You should enter your little funny columns into this Guardian thing. So I entered it, not really, like, thinking anything of it. And then the people at the student paper were like, Fern, you're in the Guardian today. And, like, you got nominated as, like, best student critic. And so then I had to go down to this thing in London. And I'd never been to London. And me and my mum were just clueless. Went to this big awards do, and that was when it was like another one of those really jarring things where you realize what class you are.
Yeah,
because we had to go to this talk given by journalists. It was like Caitlin Moran, Hadley Freeman, who I love, Zoe Williams, some other cunt, right? And I remember this boy standing up at the thing at the talk being like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm talking to Zoe Williams. And I was thinking, who the fuck's Zoe Williams? Like, what a fucking dork. Like, they were all just jizzing themselves to be in the media because they'd all been planning it. Mm. But anyway, so I get this prize. I got, like, running up best critic or something. And then just as soon as that happened, all the posher kids that were at the paper start giving me more work. And then I got, like, offered, the editor of the NME, like, got in touch with me, asking, I think he'd moved over to The Sun and wanted me to do stuff for The Sun. Then I wrote to Caitlin Moran for advice because she'd been one of the judges of my thing. She gave me all this advice. And then I got a scholarship to go and train as a news reporter in Sheffield. And then just as that was happening... I had to do an article where I tried stand up for as a prank, and then I became a comedian. But anyway, all the journalism stuff was only possible because I was stripping at the time.
Yeah,
it's just impossible if you're working class to break into journalism. Not impossible, but very, very difficult to get the work experience.
I honestly can't see how someone could do that. Like, I studied radio and I was very lucky because my mum's boyfriend was a lorry driver and he would give me lifts up to Dublin. And
yeah, like, when you told me that, like, it's just a series of fucking chance things happening to you.
Yeah.
And it was also when I realised how important accent is and people judging whether or not you're a cretin, because as soon as people could read my writing, they all took me for as intelligent as I am. But to them, I was more intelligent than I seemed.
Yeah.
And it's repulsive.
It's so weird. I'm going to ask you some specific questions about stripping.
Mm.
What's your favourite song to strip to? Or did you have a favorite?
You have a pole song.
Right?
So
what's a pole song? Like
a song you dance to on the pole. Like Jennifer Lopez with Criminal. When she's about 60, which would be illegal in the stripping world. Mine's was, there was a few because you change it up and get tired and stuff, but everyone has their own pole song.
Yeah.
And no other girl was allowed to use your pole song.
Oh, so does like it gets territorial?
Not, it's so not how they show the bitchiness of it. There's a lot more like sisterhood than there is bitchiness.
Yeah.
Which sounds really lame, but
no,
I really like the people I worked with. So one of my songs was a song called Vow by Garbage, which I've heard Shirley Manson say that she's aware that strippers love her music. But another one was, it was a Simian Mobile disco one.
Was it like
Believe? I believe.
Okay, I'm gonna
quite like
an
electro dance one. Then another one was Six Underground by the Sneaker Pimps. If you heard these,
right, you know what they
but
are.
If I was to say the general, the songs that I remember, I've got a playlist of them on Spotify because I used it to write my pilot.
Yeah.
There was a girl who was amazing at pole dancing. She was a little cunt though. Sasha, that's right. Not her real name, obviously.
Yeah.
She danced to Breathe On Me by Britney Spears. That was like post Britney
Breathe
shaving
on
her
me.
Head. Yeah.
What think I like?
I can't sing it. It's like a very sexy, breathy Britney song.
Okay, okay.
No one ever danced to Slave For You. There's a reason for that. Good pole songs are generally, we worked this out one time in the strip club, they're generally your resting heart rate.
Right, okay.
So
so you couldn't like...
Dope Show by Marilyn Manson would be a classic.
What?
Or...
You couldn't do like Cat and I Joe. I would love to see someone...
No, no. You couldn't do a fast one. What other ones did they have? I told you there was like a terrible Lil' Kim song we had to dance to on the bar.
Oh yeah, so you had this thing, what was it called? You have your pole song, that's the one that you individually danced to.
Yeah, but one summer, one of the best summers of my life, I worked in this place that was failing. It was like, because it was the time of the recession.
Right.
Which also happens in Hustler.
Yes, it does, yeah.
So bizarre watching that film. So it was the recession, and this club I was working in was just trying anything they could to get customers in. So they would have, like, costume night on a Friday. They would have incentives for who could be the best dancer, and dancer of the week would win a La Senza voucher to buy more pants. Then the worst dancer of the week would have to spend the last hour of their shift dressed as an old lady mm-hmm. or a pumpkin.
Or a pumpkin.
A pumpkin.
Like, so would this be to, this would impede you getting more money or tips?
It would. And it would be if you said something really stupid. So one girl asked, is Romania in Rome? So she had to dress as an old lady. I just remembered one of my friends was so hot that when she got worst dancer and she was a pumpkin, she still got loads of dances.
Oh, perfect. Like, what's like the day-to-day, like, do you go in an hour before? I'm kind of interested in like the minutiae of being a stripper and like the, do you know, like...
Well, all my friends at uni, once I started doing that, more of my friends were strippers than were Edinburgh Uni students because Edinburgh Uni's really dominated by middle class and very upper class English people. And then at the strip club, there was other girls who were also doing it for uni. And then just cool, like really cool, weird goth girls. So I just fell in with them and then I lived with one or two of them. So basically, it takes you ages to get ready for work. I never really wore makeup before I did it. And then, like, you start wearing more and more makeup, fake tanning. You always have to have a friend in a strip club to get...
To get your back.
Yeah, to do your back.
Ah.
If you don't have a friend, it's evident because you have a big white patch on your back. Like, so yeah, you'd get ready. Generally, I would do my makeup at home and clip in my hair. Clip in my weave. Then you had to, I never shave my legs anymore because I did that job. Like, I'm just like, I've done it enough times.
Yeah.
So you have to shave your legs, your fanny, your armpits, your moustache. Like, it just was, it's like getting ready for a date every night.
Yeah, that's a lot of effort.
So much effort. And it costs a lot to, like, get your costumes. So my favourite costume was this red PVC nurse's outfit.
Amazing.
But my fake tan would melt onto it and turn it green. So when I was living with, like, normal students, yeah, obviously I didn't want them to know, so you'd have to discreetly wash the tan out of your nurse's costume. And then, so you'd go, do the finishing bit. You probably would go in an hour before, and then the first 3 or 4 hours of a night, if you're on a weeknight, all you do is watch TV and chat with your friends.
Nice.
Yeah, it was great. So we would watch, like, Channel 5 documentaries, and I specifically remember I was watching one called I Married the Eiffel Tower, that's, like, one of my favourites. And the strippers were like, what's her problem? Why does she fancy the Eiffel Tower? And occasionally you'd be watching it with, like, one customer who'd try and chip in, and you'd be like, shut up. It just was great. I hope you can see now why I wanted to write something about it.
No, it's totally great.
Pretty much 10% of it was doing dances. I really hope my neighbours don't hear any of this.
So you hid it from the other students when you were in college?
Yeah, and then people on the paper gradually found out. And they were, like, fake okay with it. But this is why I don't like talking to journalists about it. There was people who were, like, squeamish about asking me about it on the student paper.
Yeah.
And the second they got an internship at the Independent, and I'm thinking of really specific people here, they would phone me. These are people that had barely spoken to me before, and they would phone me, oh, hi, Fern. Yeah, I was just about the stripping. And it's like, oh, the job that you couldn't even fucking mention to me before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they would want a quote for their work experience piece. And to me, that's a type of voyeurism that is no different to the customers coming in. You're wanting something off me for nothing, even though you've feigned disgust at this job. It just was...
That's the best description of it. Sorry, that's really, like... I should shut my mouth and let you keep talking.
Oh, no.
But that's, like, seriously... Oh, I agree with that so much.
Yeah, like, and it happened so many times, and it was always the people that didn't, that just, like, I knew were disgusted by it. It's also why I've been asked multiple times to do documentaries on stripping, and I'm like, I'm really not doing that. Like,
yeah.
And I'll do most shitty comedy jobs for money, but I was like, I am not going to do a documentary on it, because even now they've still not done an accurate documentary on it.
Did you see, like, a very British brothel, the Channel 4?
Yeah, was that the thing in Sheffield?
Yeah, I felt weird about that because I felt like those people were given, like, an honest depiction of what it was like, but they had, like, weird
Johnny music.
Yeah, like fat person music. Do you know the way, like, if you see a fat person on the telly, he's like,
as soon as she mentioned that documentary, that I remembered the music straight away.
Yeah.
Well, it all speaks of, well, there's a really British discomfort with sex and talking about it. And I noticed it since gigging in Europe, where they're a lot, mainland Europe, they're a lot more...
Yeah, I was going to say not
comfortable
Ireland.
With it. Not Ireland, fuck. At least in the UK, I can do material about strip clubs. Ireland, I really couldn't. They just were like, don't speak of such things. But even the sex shops in Ireland have, like, the most twee names, like,
yeah,
private ladies, or, like, not even that, like,
yeah. I'm trying to think of, there's one, Miss Fantasia, I think. There's, yeah, I remember I went into one sex shop in Ireland, and I was looking for lube, basically. And
was this before the internet? Or boots?
I didn't know. I no. Do you know why it was? It's because, like, super. I just thought, you know what? Treat yourself, Alison. Why go to Tesco when you could go to a specialist and just buy it there, right?
Mm.
And your man just looked at me and I was like, excuse me, do you sell lube here?
Holy shit.
And he was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. And I left because I couldn't continue the conversation. And I swore.
And then did you have to go and live in a Magdalene laundry? For asking the question.
Yeah.
That's mad.
Then I was like, I'll spit in my hand forevermore.
That's... Exiting's more embarrassing.
Oh yeah.
Also, I worked in one of those shops when I lived in Manchester, and like they see so much worse with like the people buying butt plugs and stuff. So
you worked in a sex shop?
Yeah, but that's just like normal retail.
Yeah.
I have to emphasize. Wait, I'll just check my cat's not going on the
Yeah,
roof.
I'm so sorry. I'm gonna check how long we were chatting there for. We'll finish up in about 5 minutes. Is that okay?
Oh yeah, yeah. Thank you so much. Whenever I get started talking about stripping, I love it.
Oh, good. It's like, I'm trying to think, have I covered like everything with stripping? Oh, just one thing as well. Like, how does one apply for a job in a strip club, and can you transfer to other strip clubs, and what is the done thing there?
Good question.
Thank you.
The way you apply is you just phone up for an audition. If you've never done it before, the way it works is a girl will come, one of the strippers comes and talks to you, and you can ask her questions. Then she gives you a lap dance.
She gives you a lap dance?
Yeah. And then you do a lap dance for the boss.
Yeah.
And but having just learned how to do it 1 minute before, and that's really it. Then when you want to move to another club, there's different ways of doing this. It's basically impossible to get fired unless you're a drunk or like a drug addict, and the drinking was a lot more of a problem for people I worked with, because there was a lot of girls couldn't do it unless they were drinking, which is sad. Whereas I didn't drink when I was doing it because it's just not wise, really. But I mean, I'm not a big drinker anyway. I should explain, at the when you work in a strip club, you pay like £70, say on a Friday or and a Saturday, you'll pay a commission. So you pay £70 out of the money you've earned to work there. I mean, I'm talking 10 years ago, so it's probably a lot more now.
Yeah. How much would you earn average, just in relation to the £70? Like, is that a big chunk of your...
Well, sometimes it was, and sometimes you would earn minus money, so you would go away and make minus £20.
Oh, Jesus.
If it was, like, say it was a quiet night, they didn't give a shit. You're still paying your commission. So, if you're working in a club where that keeps happening, they're not getting customers in, you're going through the horrendous experience of not only being a stripper, which, as you know, is a taboo, but being a stripper that's just paid £20 to be a stripper. When it gets to that point, what you do is you wait till you're at a night where you've earned money, you get all your commission, you get all the money you've earned, you say you're going for a cigarette, you get dressed, then you run like the wind into the night. And I remember one of my friends said she did that. She used to make me laugh so much. She actually did comedy for a bit, and then doesn't do it anymore. But she said she was working for this absolute bitch of a manager, who was always like, her fake name was Sophia, and she'd be like, Sophia, why are your thighs so big? Oh, you're probably not getting work because of your big thighs. And then when she finally took her commission to run away, she ran down the street and the woman was like, Sophia, come back. And she was like, who's Sophia? I don't know Sophia.
That sounds like a perfume ad, like Sophia's gone.
And it's like, yeah, it was great. I never got the guts to do a runner with my commission. I always try and think if I ever left on bad terms. Oh, the last place I worked in, I got this like basically miraculous thing happened where I'd been writing to the student funding body in Scotland for years saying, look, I'm at university, I'm not getting anything from my parents, even though my dad earns too much for me to get a grant. Like I work full time supporting myself. I didn't say I was a stripper, but I was like, I can't take the pressure anymore and you're giving me the wrong funding. They suddenly came back to me and were like, oh my God, you're right. We have not given you the correct funding for 4 years. So overnight, both me and my brother got like 10 grand or something.
Whoa.
So I was able to just live as a normal, wealthy, spoiled student. It was fucking amazing, man.
Did your grades go up when you were able to live?
Oh, my grades went up to firsts, and then I got a first for my dissertation. But obviously, because, do you know what I mean? Like, still, like, makes me quite annoyed, but anyway. So I quit the strip club, and I was, like, saying to this, the female managers were always much worse, by the way. I was like, ha ha, I'm leaving to become a journalist. And she stood in the street and she went, you still shot your tits for money. I was like, yeah, bye, doing the fingers to her, backing down the street. It was such a Wicked Witch of the West moment.
Gee, what was it like? I once went to a cabaret night I was covering in a documentary. And someone did like a lap dance as a part of the thing, and then like was on me. They chose me as the person that they lap danced on, and like as a customer, I didn't know. I just kept giving them the thumbs up as if like, you're doing a great job.
Yeah,
I didn't know what to do. Like,
that's a nice response compared to the number of men who lick the air. Which,
they lick the air.
They lick the air and they raise their eyebrows as if you're going to be like, I love when a man licks the air in front of him. It'd be mad if I still had any respect for men at this point.
Did they ever think that there was more of a relationship than customer and stripper? And how did you deal with that?
Oh, I didn't have any regulars because actually, to be honest, that's what you want, is to make them think that you care about them as a person. But I was so unable to do that that I had one regular. He was a struggling music teacher who would just like come in and get a bit more dances at Christmas. It was so shit. So fucking shit. I must have been one of the only girls that didn't have a regular. I've got one other friend that I'm still in touch with who like hated the job a lot more than me.
Yeah.
And she didn't have any regulars either. The best people can feign that they care about men. Maybe they do.
How do you feel about people do you feel defensive of being a stripper, or how do you feel about people's kind of attitude towards it? Like when you have your journalist, I was going to say friends, but the people that kind of try to use your story, or you have people kind of ask, like it's almost like they're treating you like you've been through a horrible experience when it was just something you did in college. Like, how would you describe your attitude towards stripping now?
It's something that I want to tell the story on my own terms, which is why I like talking about it on something like this.
Yeah.
And why I wrote a pilot about it.
I really, really hope that gets made.
I really hope it does as well, because it's, I'm happy with how it's turned out. And I just spent, I think it's been like 5 years of being like, but even at the time of doing it, there'd be so many things that would happen of an evening and I was like, this has to be a script at some point. But basically, and then when Hustlers came out, I was like, Hustlers has come out in the time I've been writing this. And I was gutted, but then I watched it and I was so happy that they got certain things accurate. Like, the thing that, also I was delighted that you barely saw a single tit in it.
Yeah.
I think you only really saw Lizzo's tits.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I don't think you did see any boobs in it.
Because I'd spent years and years saying to different people I was pitching this script to, I want to make a feminist thing about a strip club that shows like the dynamics between men and women and all this. And it's really hard explaining it to people, but it seems to be getting easier the way things, I don't know, the way culture is now or something.
Yeah.
But basically, I just want to tell the story on my own terms, which is why I've never wanted to do a documentary on it. It's why I hate talking to journalists about it, because they're never going to listen to anything you say. They're always going to project the story they want onto it anyway. And also, yeah, my mum cries anytime she sees... I mean, that's how my mum found out, was she saw it in a paper.
Yeah, and she cried.
She was scanning it through her Tesco checkout that she worked on, and she phoned up, and then we didn't speak for about 9 months.
Right.
So, yeah, it was really hard.
Shit, man.
And she was like...
I was expected to go, haha, and I was like, oh, shit, actually, this is quite sad.
Oh, no, but I can't be like, yeah, I was raised really Catholic, and the cool thing is my parents love that I was, that I was a stripper. No, my mum is horrified by it. She's really proud that I'm doing a script for the BBC, but she doesn't know what it's about.
Right.
Neither of my parents know what it's about.
It's going to be so much fun when they see it. It'll be good.
I hope so. I've written it. I'm going to write my tits out of it as well, because now I've seen how they've done it in Hustlers.
There's no, yeah. Yeah, that's...
Also, I did so few lap dances.
Like, I'm interested in, like... Do you think, like, it made you... How did being a stripper affect your feminism? Because you are a feminist.
I mean, it completely got me into feminism, because I remember... Because if you're doing a liberal arts degree at uni, feminism is unavoidable, and that it's always an element of everything you study on an English lit course.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember laughing at... I think I had to read French feminism in first year, and I was laughing at it, because I couldn't understand it. And then once I worked in the strip club, I just became... I remember reading... there's my favourite feminist book's called The Dialectic of Sex, and it's a radical one for the 70s, but it's not radical at all. Mm. It just talks about men telling women to smile, and it's so that men can feel more comfortable. And it all made sense to me, because I'd just been stripping for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. And it also meant I put up with less when I went into comedy.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, you're totally made to be a comedian and not take any shit.
Thank you.
No, thank you so much. I feel like, I think we've been talking for a very long time.
All right.
But I appreciate it so much. Yeah, that was Fern Brady. So our podcast is coming out at the start of August. Very excited about it. It's called Wheel of Misfortune. You should have a listen to it. And it's going to be very similar to this podcast, as in us telling each other funny stories about our lives. But the cool thing about our podcast and how it's different is it's all done by chance. So I have a wheel, I have stuff written on it like pets, parents, even shitting yourself. I'm not looking forward to that episode. But you should catch it where you get podcasts in August. Thank you so much for listening to Alison Spittle Show. The producer for this show was the wonderful Sarah Garvey. Thank you to Alan and Paddy in Head Stuff for being in class. I'm going to thank Bobby Ahern, amazing music man, who did our theme tune there. Sir Bobby Jukebox, check out the music that he makes there. And William Conway, who did the artwork. Thank you so much for listening. If you were listening to this show to maybe get a bit of a lowdown on the shit heap that is Irish comedy at the moment, you're out of luck. I'm not going to talk about it this week because I'm tired and I'm trying to live with positivity in my life. And it's a lovely podcast with me and my friend. And I love female comedians. They're the best. I hope you have a lovely 2 weeks and I'll see you soon. Have a great day. Bye.
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.